monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert moves for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Preparations are concealed, not publicized. The stakes are buried, not headlined. Its percentages are silent, not praised.
Billions of people just living out their lives, oblivious.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake! I drink it up!
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country. The best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Shh, say it again, Shal. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there!
Today on Cold Reality Radio. From VaccineFraud.com, my guest will be Patrick Jordan, author and researcher into some of the most amazing information that I've personally ever heard. And we're going to be talking about possibly the single cause of all disease. And that's very, very tough to say, but you have to look into things from all angles, from every angle. And that's what we're going to be talking about today on Cold Reality Radio here on this Sunday, April 24th. All right, so we're going to get started. Welcome to Cold Reality Radio here on the UCY.TV Broadcasting Network. As I said today, my guest from VaccineFraud.com, Patrick Jordan. You've heard him over the last month. He's been on with Clint, who has hosted for me in my absence. And I'm so happy to have Patrick here today to speak one-on-one with him about his research, how he started this incredible research. And I got to tell you, when my friend Greg, who you've heard on here before, told me about Clint over on RBN and his research with his podcast, Corporation Nation, it took me a little while to really just kind of move into that. You know, when you're doing this type of when you're doing this type of podcasting, and you know, I'm like a quarter of the researcher that Clint is and Patrick. You know, you you go down a path and you think that you know things. You think that you figured some of this out to a certain extent. You want some of the satisfaction of saying, I'm understanding things. I'm moving in the right direction. Well, like all of us, we get derailed by different things. The system deceives us. The system pushes us in a particular direction because they want us to think one thing when something else is actually happening. And that's kind of the crux of what we're going to talk about today. So, Patrick, do we have you?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Great. Thanks for having me, Sholly, and hello to all the listeners.
Okay. All right. You're very exciting for me because, as I said, the last 6 months or so, I've really gotten into listening to Clint's live shows, and then going back and listening to the earlier podcast when you started communicating with Clint and combining your research together. And just driving in the car, Drew Carter, just a super, super guy up there and up in Canada there, taking care of putting together the spreadsheet, you know, the shows 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you could just click in there and you see Patrick Jordan and Clint talking about this, or Patrick Jordan and Clint talking about that, and so many other guests. But your research is the most astonishing and at the same time, you know, just so frightening and like, wow, it just takes your breath away when you really think about, you know, what is going on out there. So what I'd like to do is again say vaccinefraud.com is Patrick's website, and he's got his first, I believe it was your first book, the ICD-999. He's so many, like a dozen or more books. So let's talk about how this all began. What was your journey? What makes a Patrick Jordan? Who you are right now? How did you get here?
Okay. Clint and I, independent of each other, arrived at a system that's based on words. If you start with a word, you must define it. That definition then tells you where you're starting from and where you're going to. And so if I can, I like to do things kind of artistically. Let me start out with the definition of what hell is to Pat Jordan. Hell stinks. So whether it's the fire and brimstone is just basically like a pure grade of sulfur that when it burns, oh man, go to Yellowstone sometime if you want to know what brimstone smells like. It's horrific. It'll take your breath away. It stings your eyes. Hell stinks. But, see, I live in what I call the grain ghetto of Illinois. It's nothing but industrial farm fields in all four directions. And just yesterday, I'm working in my garden. You know, it could be Eden, the Garden of Eden. It could be. But my neighbors are all working the fields, and they've got their spray rigs out there, and they are polluting the planet with glyphosate, Roundup, you know, whatever that they're spraying for weed control. And quite often there's a dopant in there so that you can smell chemicals that usually don't have a color to them, they don't have an odor, they don't have a taste. So they have to put a warning in there. And I'm not kidding. You know, people know that I'm flippant. I'm not kidding. It smelled like sulfur. And here I am in the middle of my garden. The cherry trees are blooming. The apple trees are blooming. The birds are singing. The sky is blue. Of course, there's, you know, chemtrails starting. It could be Eden. But the smell informed me that I was in hell. And so when I define what hell is, what is hell? Hell stinks because they've destroyed the biosphere. Charlie, I'm going to be talking in past tense.
Okay.
Probably we're going to get into prions at some point. But when I say they have destroyed, the problem with people today is that they're always looking for something in the future. Well, you know, the new world order is coming. Man, pull your head out. It's been here for over 6,000 years.
Mm-hmm. It's just taken on another form.
Oh, and this is a beautiful thing. What you had said in your introduction was, you know, they try to get you, you know, to look over here while they're hitting you, you know, with their other hand. It's deflection, deception. It's also what I call opposite day. And this is key within the Talmudic system and within Satanism. The creed of Satanism is good is evil and evil is good. And so here we are back to definitions again. What is good to a Satanist, a Talmudist? Evil.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're defining it. What does it mean to them? And so when you said, you know, they're trying to get you to focus on one thing when the truth is actually 180 degrees in the other direction, I came up with a phrase called opposite day because I saw this really awesome cartoon on a Muslim website of a Hasidic Jew with the hat on and the dreadlocks standing on his head in an art museum looking at a picture. And the caption was, this is how Jews see the world. Opposite day, upside down. And so what I did is I took that and I hammered that onto a little skit that Calvin and Hobbes used to do when that comic strip was going on. They would play opposite day, where everything they said and did would be the opposite of what they said or were doing. And that's what we're surrounded in. And that's what causes, and we're back to definitions and words again, cognitive dissonance, which everybody needs to go to Hermes Press, so that's HERMESPress.com, and Norman Livergood explains Pavlov's second discovery about how to induce traumatic mind control by re-traumatizing somebody. And then I'm pretty sure on that same web page that has to do with Pavlov. And anybody that wants to write to me, just go to vaccinefraud.com, get my email. You can write to me privately. You can either join my email list or you can stay private, doesn't matter. And I can send you the links to anything that we're talking about. But also he talks about the use of paradox as mind control. And so if I told you that those are contrails when they're actually chemtrails, and then I would say, oh, yeah, but, you know, there's some chemical components in there. It's like, well, yeah, that would be jet fuel exhaust, wouldn't it? And, you know, you wouldn't know what to think, you know, if you were an idiot, because you would be given, like, two competing ideas in your head, and then the sender of that idea can then tell you what to think, because you just got two ideas crashing into each other, you don't know what to think, you're in a vulnerable space, and then they can say, yeah, you know, that's why they call them chemtrails, because they're just vapor trails, and they've been that way forever. You know, Clint said that they're going back into movies,
yeah,
and actually putting chemtrails into the skies of, like, old movies.
I believe that I was watching Red Dawn, the original Red Dawn.
Oh, wow.
Towards the end, I didn't know to make the comparison that if I had seen it before and saw the chemtrail in the sky, but I certainly saw that in there too. And then there was a movie back in the 80s with that Burt something. It was one of those action movies, and they were actually doing this. They were fighting and battling on top of the Statue of Liberty. And so that, you know, imagine the magnitude of that. And then, boom, you see, like, white lines in the sky then. So
yeah,
either they were there then or they're being imposed, you know, like you said.
And so, you know, I've got photographic evidence of chemtrails being in full, you know, in full use as early as 1997. I've got my own photos, so I don't need to be informed by outside sources as to when I was aware of them. They, you know, the project could have started well before that.
Mm-hmm.
There's some people that say so. I think Project Cloverleaf was at least 95, if not 97.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's like, what is it that we know? That's our baseline that we have to start with. So, you know, you wanted to know, who is Pat Jordan? How did I get started? And I'm taking you there. I always take a roundabout circuit to get there. But what was my problem? My problem was I had chemical allergies. And that's why I brought up Hell Stinks. Because I couldn't figure out why if I just smelled something, I would get deathly ill. And you go to a doctor, the first thing they want to do is send you to head shrink. So it's like, ain't going there. You know, the problem was in my head. I was having like migraine headaches and enough nausea to make you think you had the flu.
And
like every day.
And this was what year was this?
Oh, pretty much the entire scope of my life has been plagued with chemical allergies. But you know, as I came out to the farm in my teen years and was just literally in a fog of chemicals, it worsened. And so over my teen years, I was suffering and questioning and doing, you know, basically the health and nutrition research to figure out what was going on because doctors were no help. I wasn't going to a head shrink, even though it was in my head. You know, I had a headache, but it wasn't like, it was not emotional, it was not psychological, it was cause and effect related. But here's the problem. Who would believe that you could smell something and systemically get ill? I couldn't. I made it all the way through working in tons of different industries in Southern California. From packaging, you know, this was like a temporary job placement, packaging video recordings, so VHS tapes, which are plastic inside a plastic box that got sent through a machine to wrap plastic around it. I lasted at that for one day. The smells were so bad, and that's when it started to creep into my consciousness of, here I was in a job, and I never minded the factory works. You know, I tell people I got the brain the size of a planet, but I'm perfectly fine pushing a broom. There's no ego there. Whatever it takes to make cash, that's what I'll do. So I would have stayed at that job, but I couldn't. It was literally killing me.
Right.
All that plastic, and the drones were just standing around, you know, doing their jobs like nothing was wrong. And I thought, you know, how could this be? They're unaffected, and I'm ready to die. So I quit that job, pardon me, and I bounced through different other jobs. One of them was in a semiconductor plant that gave me a really, really good case of arsenic poisoning.
Wow. Okay.
And it's this process where you start to realize that your environment and something as strange as just smelling a chemical could make you ill. And I got to tell you, Sholly, I was still like conflicted. How can a smell make you ill? And so I came back to Illinois completely beaten. My health was destroyed. And I went to pre-med. I entered college and I was going to study to be a doctor because, hey, nobody could answer questions for me. I'm going to answer the questions for myself. So I'm in a anatomy and physiology class, and typically they would assign chapters, and they'd test you on it, and you'd get your little star and a pat on the head. But I wasn't getting what I needed, and I realized early on, you know what, if you read more than just what they assign, you might actually learn something. Because they wrote a textbook not to say, oh, read chapter 13, and then next week we're going to go to chapter 6. Wait a minute. They wrote this, you know, like 700-page textbook from beginning to end with numbered chapters, and they did it for a reason. So I instituted my own practice of reading every textbook from cover to cover. And as I'm reading deep into chapters that were never, ever going to be assigned, ever, in these classes, I came across this single thing that said, you make like a quart of mucus per day.
Right.
And immediately I'm going up to my anatomy and physiology professor, and I said, look at this, a quart of mucus a day. I said, where's it going?
Yeah, I know, like, and he just, choking and...
Thank you. He just sat there with this really smug look on his face, and he made a swallowing motion. And I got to admit, you know, people think I'm smart. I am really slow. And I go, I don't get it. And he made a swallowing motion again. And I'm getting upset now, you know, because this guy was intelligent, and all I wanted was a damn answer.
Right.
And I said, I'm sorry, I still don't get it. And he swallowed a third time. And I said, you're just going to have to explain it to me. He goes, you swallow it. He said, the cilia bring mucus up from the lungs. A mucus drains down from the sinuses. And it goes down your throat. It coats your entire digestive tract. And that, Sholly, was my revelation of, like, suffering for nearly 30 years of my life, suffering and never once knowing how a smell, and, you know, I started this out with, you know, the definition of hell, hell stinks. How could a smell harm a body systemically? Well, if it gets into the lungs, because the smell is not just the smell, molecules that have an odor. So it is the chemical. Whether it is parts per million, parts per billion, it doesn't matter. It is the chemical. If the chemical is in your lungs, then it has direct access to your bloodstream. If it's dissolved in the mucus and it goes down your throat, in your stomach, into your intestines, you're digesting it.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Just like the smoking cigarettes and things like that, obviously it just... You know, it's just
beautiful.
Going into your lungs. It's going, it's getting in there. You're, and then of course people, you know, they'll eat and then they'll smoke and then they'll drink coffee and then it's just all, you know, whatever you get in there gets into your system. If you get it on, your skin. I've had reactions personally from things that were supposedly organic and I had not a real bad reaction, but woke up one night in my, like in the other side of my elbow right there, just two aches, like aching in my, you know, in the crux of my arm. And I was, what in the world is this? But go ahead, go on. So he's swallowing, you pick up on it and you're like, that's what's happening to me.
I take notes during radio shows. I put down eat, smoke and drink coffee. It's like
you
just defined America, man.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody that doesn't do that. And they don't realize that they're self-medicating. Because I've got a friend that's a chiropractor, and that their family raises horses. And he said, the best way to get worms out of a horse is to give them a plug of chewing tobacco.
Oh,
I've never been able to look at smokers the same way again, because it's like, yeah, they're just keeping their worms at bay, man.
Yeah, doing something.
So
I mean, the horses get dewormed from the chewing tobacco, or
yeah, the nicotine is a toxic alkaloid. In the old days, before they came up with the neonicotinoids that they're blaming the bee die off on,
right.
Part of the problem, but not the whole answer. Mm-hmm. Before that, the USDA said nicotine is one of the most powerful insecticides that no insect can develop a resistance to.
Wow!
And you know, you read that because you know everybody needs to know if they're not familiar with me. I live out on the farm, so farming and agriculture is my life, and I'm reading this USDA information, and it's like, what do you mean nicotine is an insecticide, man?
Mm-hmm.
People are chewing this stuff, people are smoking this stuff, And I just found out there's this really impressive body of work by Lawrence Brockmeyer on tuberculosis. And he's got a reference in there that says in West Africa, they use tobacco as an herb to keep tuberculosis at bay. So insecticide, call it antibiotic, antimicrobial, you know, look at where we've come, Shelley. It's all about words and definitions. It's not just cigarettes. It's not just a commercial commodity. What is it? It's a nicotine delivery system. What is nicotine? It's an insecticide. Why are you dosing yourself with insecticide?
Right.
This is Continuum, by the way, and Continuum is my last book. It's out there right now. I just finished Prion Agenda, and it will be released soon. But Continuum is a concept that I came up with myself, just like Judy Wood. I love Judy Wood when she said she came up with the word dustification because there was nothing in physics that could describe what happened to the towers.
Dustification?
Dustification.
Dustification of a yeah.
Because the towers just turned dust, man.
They did.
So I took that concept, and it's like, okay, if words for what we're experiencing don't exist, then I have to either synthesize a word or take what exists and remodel it so that it can show what's going on. And Continuum is basically what Clint and I do with words. You know, you start at one word, and that, so this is the fantastic part, is Clinton and I have had many personal conversations, and I said, you know what you're doing? Because he said, you know, you can start with one word, but you have to go to the next, and that next will lead you to the next. I said, you just defined the Ouroboros. That's the snake with the tail in its mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the occult, that's not the snake eating its tail. That's what you had defined earlier as the look over there, the opposite day, the distraction. In the occult, it is the serpent speaking itself into existence.
Mm.
And so when we start with one word and it leads to another word, that then becomes a continuum. It's a closed loop. And you just going around in a circle, it's almost a trap that if we use words, because think about this, words are copyrighted because they wrote the dictionaries and they taught the words to us. So they have entrapped us with spell works, because a spell is exactly what it means. Mm-hmm. To do a black magic spell, you have to put something on parchment. You have to spell it out. And I think, I don't have any background on this, that cursive writing was the ability to write a spell really quick in case you had to put the hex on somebody. Because, you know, cursive is very flowing, and you can do it quicker than, like, block style.
It's like skating, as opposed to...
Thank you. Oh, nice, nice. Writing another note. Cursive. Skating. I like it. Okay. So to keep on track, because sometimes I distract myself, the mucus then dissolves the chemicals in the environment. It can get into your bloodstream, get into your guts, and that was my revelation of that's, and here, okay, here is the most important thing you need to know about science. I've been studying science since I was a kid. I was studying science when I was in college, never graduated. Mechanism of action is the most important thing in chemistry. And what that exchange with my college professor did for me was showed me the mechanism of action of how a chemical, whether it was in large doses or small doses, could get into the human body and affect it systemically. And it was from that point forward that I was able to take control of my life, because everything that I was getting A's in, because, you know, I'm that type of personality, I was getting A-level grades in my pre-med education, it was totally freaking useless. The only thing I got out of, like, 2 years of college was that you make a quart of mucus a day and swallow it, man. And it was worth the money.
If it got you past this or gave you any relief whatsoever, then, yeah, you'd have to say that it was, that 2 years was worth it.
And I guess a little qualification. So that was what I learned academically. What I learned outside of academia was that everyone at that level, and especially veterinary sciences, because it's one thing to study the human body. There's, you know, there's anatomy and physiology for the human body, and that's like one species. But when you're a vet, you have to know, like, cats and dogs and horses and, you know, exotic animals. And the pressure on these people is so hard because most of those physiologies are radically different. They all cheated. Now, what does that say about the vet profession? Because, you know, I'm just speaking from my personal experience. They all cheated at the highest level. You know, I was one of those self-motivated people that intended to get high marks on my coursework, and I got it through hard work. But the other people that were getting A's were all cheaters. And so that was the other part of my education within the college system is you make a quart of mucus a day, and everybody cheats. But see, that served me in life because it really makes you frosty. If you look around and you see people that are granted licenses, and, you know, everybody has to be, everybody needs a background in Clint's work to understand the scope of just that statement, to be granted a license in anything, and the fact that they cheated to get there, man, that should just, you know, pull up your nethers just thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Among other things that... That go on a daily basis and have gone on for quite some time.
Because the system has been in place for that long.
Yeah.
So what I was doing is, you know, I had mechanism action, and I was looking into then what is called multiple chemical sensitivity, environmental illness, chemical allergy, and this right now, we're into another term that I had invented because I was studying religion and black magics, and it's like, wait a minute, they keep renaming things. So I came up with what's called the Babylonian name change, because the gods of ancient Mesopotamia, Babylon, Chaldea, all the surrounding city-states, they would have like either a pantheon or a trinity of gods, but they just give them different names. So they were taking the same pig, putting on new lipstick, and selling it to the next rube that came by. So the Babylonian name change morphed into the same pig, different lipstick. And I started to realize, okay, they're playing words here. Multiple chemical sensitivity is environmental allergy, illness is chemical allergy, is whatever they want to throw on it. And you can start to lump diseases like chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia into this constellation that's MCS. But another breakthrough that I had was while I was looking into MCS, I fell across some stuff from Defeat Autism Now. And it's like, oh my God, they're treating these kids with the same therapies that somebody with chemical allergy would use.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, see, before I had the word continuum, I started to see the inklings of it. Wait a minute, man. MCS has tons of correspondences with autism. And so I started to go on that trail, and I started to collect data that even as long ago, 6 years ago, I was collecting data on MCS that I only just understood the significance of and put in my last two books. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that people need to understand is just be a pack rat, collect data. You don't even have to get it right now. Your mind and your understanding, your wisdom develops over time. Just collect it, and it will reveal itself to you. Mm. Okay. So in between, you know, me trying to fix me, the year 2000, my mother came down with acute kidney failure. And like I said before, hey, we lived in the middle of industrial agriculture. There may have been many reasons why her kidneys failed, but there's no doubt in my mind that that was part of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
So why did her kidneys fail? It's always the question. Glomerulonephritis. Well, what the heck is that? Again, it's a word. What's the definition? So they're little tubules in the kidneys, and they get inflamed and they start to leak. They break down. You get scar tissue. You look it up in the Merck medical manual, and it will say glomerulonephritis typically comes from serum sickness. And you find that in laboratory animals, but it's very rare in people. And see, my bullshit meter has always been very sensitive. And there's a phrase that goes, nothing is ever officially true until it's been denied by the government.
Exactly.
So here's Merck medical manual saying, yep, serum sickness causes glomerulonephritis, but that's only in the lab, man. That's only in experimental animals. So what do you got to do next, man? And you know, because you're a researcher, you follow the word. What the hell is serum sickness? And it was like, that was it. Because Alice, when she followed the rabbit, fell into the hole.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That was my tipping point. Serum sickness opened up in the year 2000, the entire course of my life for the past 16 years. Because what serum sickness does is it leads you exactly to vaccines. And from vaccines, this is a concept of Rudolf Virchow, I think. And I'm terrible with numbers. Everybody knows I hate numbers. 1847. We'll throw that out there. Anybody can fact check me on the internet. I'm on dial-up in the middle of nowhere. Rudolf Virchow, he said, all medicine is politics. Social medicine is politics writ large. And what that means is you can start anywhere. If you started just investigating, like, 9/11, you find out that the government, governmente in Latin, by the way, means mind control, mm-hmm. to steer the mind. And you start with government. After investigating 9/11, you realize that they're the most corrupt creatures on the planet, and it will eventually lead you to medicine. Medicine will eventually lead you to vaccines. But if you were like me and you started with vaccines, that would lead you up to the broader scope of medicine, and then I prove conclusively in my early books, so ICD-999 came out first, the Rise and Fall of Kingdom Plantae and the Rise and Fall of Kingdom Animalia came out next. In one of those Rise and Fall books, and I apologize, I wrote 15 books. I can't keep them straight in my head. One of those Rise and Fall books, I show without a shadow of a doubt that all medicine was developed by the military. So we're back to government again, because government can't exist without force. You can't steer somebody's mind unless you have carrot or stick. But I'm sorry, I said that wrong, carrot and stick. Because what they use, and this is all about mind control, it's not either or. They'll draw you in with an inducement and then threaten you with punishment. it's always a dual action.
Sure.
So there I was, Charlie. I was in the middle of mechanism of action for what took out my mother's kidneys. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, I found the root cause of multiple chemical sensitivity by following a single word, serum sickness. And that set the course of my life for the past 16 years, because there's a concept by Chris Carter. He wrote it into the character of the Indian chief in the episode Anastasi. He says to Mulder, he says, "Are you willing to sacrifice yourself to the truth?" And I got to tell you, this revelation was so big to me. It's like, okay, I either have to dedicate my entire life to exposing this conspiracy, fixing myself, fixing my mother, fixing the world, or I have to just abandon that and integrate into the hive. And like Cypher said in The Matrix, just plug me in. I know this is a mistake, but when I put it in my mouth, that's what I want to taste.
Make me an actor.
I love that.
I want to be somebody important. He's always been, Joe Paglina, he's always been a fascinating character, but he was perfect for that role. I mean, absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
Just perfect. The mole inside, and just make me an actor. So the serum sickness, the want and the need to, you know, take care of your mother, to help mother.
Yeah, because pretty much the kidneys are such delicate organs. Mm-hmm. Once you take those out, man, within the medical system, they have two options, dialysis or transplantation. Mm-hmm. There's no cures out there. Listen, I dropped out of pre-med. I dropped out because it's like, okay, I'm not going to be a medical doctor. Those are uniformed assassins of the military. I was going to go into chiropractic, but from my estimation, chiropractic is good acute medicine. If you are suffering from trauma, then yeah, that's good stuff. But they have turned it into what I call the Monday, Wednesday, Friday religion. And they're just doing it. It's a money mill. There's no healing there. It's, you know, whack the spine and have them come back. And for the ones that do branch out and, you know, they try different modalities, still all that stuff is under licensure. Mm-hmm. And the government still get to tell what a chiropractor can and can't do. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, I was about looking for mechanism of action, causation, and healing. I wasn't into getting any kind of package deal with a great compensation. Mm-hmm. And I am pretty much living under poverty level. And, you know, I make the joke of, boy, I'd like to get up to poverty level wages. But see, you have to sacrifice yourself to the truth to get to the answers. Because this is all I do, 17 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. And that's why I can speak with authority on what I'm presenting, whether it is showing the facts as they exist or making a prediction. And I would say that my prediction rate is like 90% just based on these are the patterns of how the predator hunts. This is where it's going to be and why it's going to be there. And this is what's going to happen to you if you show up.
So a little bit of what I kind of gathered just from, you know, my opening up, awakening to these possibilities was that somewhere along the line there was obviously a vaccine that compromised and created a lot of kidney problems, thus all the dialysis centers that we see, you know, all over. You know, you can't drive down the road or, you know, go through certain areas without seeing some kind of, you know, DaVita dialysis or something like that.
Oh,
just,
yeah.
Just imagine, I mean, you go in there and then they hook you up to a machine. I mean, that's hell. I mean, that's hell. I mean, that's another form of hell right there. I mean, wow. I think my uncle kind of went through that too, because he was over in the war arena in World War II, and then he came back. He got some kind of malaria or something like that, and then his kidneys were. But it was most likely from a vaccine, whatever they gave them back then.
Oh, they gave them everything back then, man. When we can go in any direction. You steer this conversation now and anywhere you want it to go, because in my book that's not out yet, Prion Agenda, I've got a Jenner, as in Edward Jenner, mm-hmm. A Shun, the generation, 1500 BC. So here's my little timeline in that. Mm-hmm. The founder of Ayurvedic medicine. So people's short hairs are going to curl on this one. Dhanwantari, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, the guy that founded Ayurvedic medicine, was inoculating disease into people in 1500 BC, man. Mm. So I will address what you're talking about with just, you know, kidney disease and vaccines, because that's like a focus of my life. But it's like, how long has this been going on? Jenner was doing his, you know, evil starting in 1790. But we're talking 1500 B.C., the founder of a ancient Indian from India medical practice was still doing the family work, man, putting the dangerous pus into people.
Right.
And even as early as 700 A.D., the Taoists, and everybody's like, ooh, you know, Taoism, man, they're so cool that, you know, they've got concepts just like quantum physics, man. Mm-hmm. You know, Taoists were snuffing smallpox scabs. Mm-hmm. They'd put them up their nose. So this whole idea of variolation, which means to use variola, which is smallpox, and vaccination using what was supposed to be and never was, cowpox, has been going on for a long time. And so the difference between those eras and now is that the WHO, I call them the veterinary to the human herd, the World Health Organization,
right.
In 1972, they published some memos that were all about how to make vaccines into weapons. Because if you shut off the immune system of your test subject with chemical means, or you genetically bred them so that they were immunodeficient, you could then give them a virus that was lethal. And these mice would run around like there was nothing wrong, man. And then all they have to do, and I learned this phrase from NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization. They write books on everything. I mean, they are like the chroniclers of life on this planet. One of their vaccine books had a term, molecular switch. So all that the WHO people had to do was flip a molecular switch, get the immune system to reactivate, and all of a sudden you got what they were studying in 1972, glomerulonephritis, and you got organ damage or death, or both. You know, one would follow the next. It was how to make a vaccine into a weapon. And I looked at that and I go, my God, that's how they took out everybody's kidneys. And I did a book called, it's a compilation from timelines in my other books. I put it all together in one workbook. It's called Timeline, A Brief History of Hell. Because that's where I think we are. I don't really think this is any semblance of life. I think that, again, people are looking to, oh, well, you know, hell is a place that people will go to in the future. Man, look around. We're soaking in it.
Yeah.
So this timeline of hell showed that 1972, when the WHO released this data, is exactly when Richard Nixon enrolled like 1.5 million people into the kidney dialysis and transplantation program that he invented for Social Security. And that's why I do these timelines, because when you see the temporal cadence, one event follows the next, you go, these SOBs are, you know, this is conspiracy. It's criminal conspiracy.
Whew. So in conversations that I've, you know, I've spoken with Clint a number of times on UCY here and on a couple other platforms, but he's spoke about, and I was reading about the Japanese testing when they injected the rabbits, and the rabbits they kind of, you know, viewed them first. They started getting sick, and then they kind of sprung back, and they weren't you know, showing any signs of being ill. And then when they looked into why and what was going on a, you know, molecular level, they saw that the immune system of the rabbit was creating a shield, if you will, some kind of shield that would stop the viral proliferation. And then years later, and I know, like, the very first time that I saw this, I remember, whether it was on television or whether it was out in one of the supermarkets, it was a Time magazine, and the cover said it was a needle with a little, like, a little drop coming out of it, you know, magnified, and it said interferon. And I was like, what in the world is that? You know, it stuck in my mind for the longest time, but I never knew what it was. And around that time was when they started trying to interfere with the interferon, when they started they started playing God, or maybe that was years later when they made some kind of synthetic interferon or something like that. But, you know, you really, and then this is something that Clint really, really, you know, you could just hear it in his voice. He says they started messing with the very thing, the natural balance, the natural reaction to, I mean, what we are and how this machine that we have, that we take, you know, a lot of people just don't realize, obviously, that this machine, these bodies that we have are miraculous, are absolute miracles. And they go in there, and at some point they say, well, we probably should, a man who is thinking in the right way would say, don't go any further with this.
Right.
Stop here. If you're even thinking about trying to stop or do anything with that other than just look at it and see how amazing it is and saying, oh my God, that's freaking amazing. Leave it alone.
Right.
Don't do anything. You're looking at a miracle. You're looking at a miracle of, and I don't even want to say evolution. I want to say a miracle of, you know, what's the other side of evolution? The intelligent design. and I don't know. I'm not sure what your take is on that. I'm pretty sure that we didn't come from monkeys, but they sure as heck want us to think that we did. But I mean, don't move past that point. And the goal was, through your work and Clint and your combined research, the goal was to find out what that is, and let's interfere with interferon, with using science as the facade and the things that they go, oh, we're going to look at this and then we're going to figure out ways to cure diseases that I guess it just kind of turns out that they created over the years. But I mean, was this the first time in, I believe it was mid-1950s, that they were able to actually look at this and say, what is this and what is the immune system? Or were they able to do that before that, Patrick?
Good question. I'm going to write that down. Sure.
Oh, thank you.
Here on trigger. There's triggers for questions and developments. And I'll look into that and I'll get back to you. And you can either pass it on or people can write to me and find out what I come up with. Because the first, and I could look it up in my timeline book in just a moment. The first thing that came to my mind was when they developed the measles vaccine, they were trying to give it to newborns. And, you know, right there, and I'm going to be militant. Let me make a disclaimer. My views are my own. I am not a... I do hug trees. Don't let that get out anywhere. I used to call them crystal rubbing tree hugger. You know, I'm not a new world, new age, you know, hippie that loves all life on the planet. I stomp cockroaches and I trap mice. I expect to reduce vermin so that they do not affect me and make me ill and, what's the word that I want? You know, eat my food, okay? So the same thing applies in my viewpoints on the two-legged variety as well. Putting a vaccine into a newborn requires summary execution, and I'm just going to say it. I mean, that's my view. It's on your radio show, so I'm making a disclaimer. That's what Pat Jordan says. Summary execution to anybody that tries to put filth into a newborn. And that's period. Now, if we were to examine it further and do a deconstruction on it, a newborn has no functioning immune system. It doesn't even activate for like months. And the thymus is not really considered developed and proficient until age 13. If you go into many hospitals and clinics, it will say no one allowed on this floor that's under the age of 13.
Right.
So they're putting absolute filth into newborns. For what reason? To build immunity? How could that be? They don't even have a functioning immune system. And the reason I brought up measles is they were so disgruntled because the maternal antibodies, the protection that comes through the placenta into the newborn so that the newborn can actually navigate this world without being injured, were taking out the vaccine.
Yeah.
They felt that was an affront to them trying to vaccinate the newborn. Well, we gotta do something about that. And they couldn't. That's the beauty of it. This absolute, precision machine says, oh, hell no.
Mm-hmm.
And for 12 months, you can't give the measles vaccine because the maternal antibodies are good for a year. It's like a freaking warranty on your tires. Maternal antibodies against measles are good for a year, and it was taking out the vaccine. And so, you know, that's the deconstruction of it. So if you have that as the facts, you would go, well, why would you even try to vaccinate a newborn? It won't work. But in the Jordan world, it's like you're trying to put poison into a newborn baby. You know, ready, aim, fire, man. Problem solved.
I guess what they are trying to steer people away from is that we are capable, without their intervention or murder,
right?
We are capable of fighting off any disease, and they have to, at an early stage, make us look weak, make us look susceptible to anything. So then that's why they have to say, well, you got to start doing this, we got to start doing that. And then who is going to sit there and say to, you know, a wasp or a, you know, a Mr. Stethoscope and say, who's obviously the facade is, oh, we're taking care of this child. We're doing what we're supposed to do for your child. If you go against that, you are scum. And that's how they portray the anti-vaxxers. That's how they portray people that go against science and go against doctors because, of course, you know, they are deities and they can do no wrong.
See, I was in class with these people. Yeah. They're all type A personalities, which means they got a God complex. They're all cheaters. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Mr. Stethoscope, he cheated, man. That's how he got his grades. He cheated. Do you really want to go to somebody with a bad attitude that cheated?
It's really,
you know, we got to rethink what medicine is.
It's really just a blueprint. All they have to do is say, listen, put this coat on, put this stethoscope on, and here's a flow chart. Somebody comes in and says this. Somebody comes in and says that. Look at the flow chart. And within 14 or 15 seconds, the prescription gets written. And then you're off to pharmacopoeia land. And of course, I remember watching, obviously we watch a lot of doctor shows. I mean, I know I have. I remember seeing early on Doctor Knows Best and all that other horse shit.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, watching a show called Scrubs, you know. And it was funny and, you know, the life of doctors and young interns and things like that. And they actually did an episode where they showed a clock down the someone walks in and says, Doc, it hurts when I go like this or, you know, this happens. And then the clock starts down the bottom. Or maybe the clock started as soon as the patient started to talk. I guess that's when it was. Maybe within 10 to 12, maybe 10 to 15 seconds. The book, the script comes out, and he writes it out and hands it over. So they were actually making a joke [S2] Wow. [S1] Of that. And, in fact, it's like, you know, it's like opposite day. When people are laughing at something like that, they should be saying, really? 15 seconds? Really? There's an answer in 15 seconds.
So let me, and I can't tell you how pleased I am that you went in the direction of the interferon. And, you know, I basically have an answer to your question on interferon and whether it was the trigger for understanding manipulation of the immune system. Let's go to then, because, you know, I don't have an answer for you on that. Let's go to the purpose of it. Because my story of interferon, as I remember it, is that they were trying to inoculate hen's eggs to make vaccines, but something in the hen's eggs was interfering with them inoculating the eggs. And that's why I brought up measles to begin with, to show in the human body this is the mechanism of action. So interferon was first noticed, and then the Japanese picked up on it, and then they did the science to show, you know, that pathway. But it was through vaccines again that they're like, damn, we're trying to make these vaccines and we can't do it because them damn chicken eggs won't let us. Mm-hmm. And so interferon as a concept was arose from that industry. But why and what you're saying and what Clint was saying is exactly the direction that I was hoping the show would go in, because my last two books, Prion Agenda, Unfolding the Continuum is the title, and the last book is The Continuum. It is all about what I discovered that these monsters are doing. Mm-hmm. If they find a body process that is a response to a disease, then they say all of a sudden, oh, man, hey, look, we found out that if you have this disease, then these heat shock proteins are mobilized, and that causes just, you know, all sorts of grief. So if we make a vaccine against heat shock proteins, then we can take them out, and then you won't have all that nasty inflammation. And when you read this, and, man, they couch it in the most just precise and large you know, multi-syllable words that they can, and they make it sound all really official and important. And somebody with my mind, you know, I'm a farm boy and I'm as crude as a sailor, I'm going, that's shuck and jive, man. What they're saying is that in order to let the disease persist in the human body, they will take out the response to the disease by creating a vaccine against the response. And because, Sholly, you and I both have the background in computer sciences, this is called the default. When you start a computer, the first thing it does is it goes to its BIOS, its basic instrument operating system. And the default that loads into that memory space is, that's it. That's the computer.
Yep.
And when I look at all the scientific data and I go, you know what? They're making vaccines and they're using chemicals to interrupt the body's response to disease. Mm-hmm. The default conclusion is that they want the disease to remain in the body unchallenged.
Right. And that's why you see a lot of, you see now more than ever, inflammation is the cause of disease. You'll hear it in any number of things. The inflammation. And I mean, all you have to do, and then this is something that anybody who really can think, you know, what is a fever? A fever is the body elevating its own temperature to be able to burn out an intruder, an infection, something.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to elevate that temperature. It needs to elevate the body temperature to be able to clean it out. And what do they do? Let's lower that temperature. Let's lower that fever. Let's take this and it'll lower the fever. So they do the exact opposite of what the body naturally does. And that's just one aspect. The other extreme aspect is what you're saying. The inflammation's there. It's a natural occurrence. It's naturally occurring in the body to some kind of stimulus, negative stimulus, I guess. And then they're like, let's trick the body into thinking that it's not, you know, what's happening is not, I guess what's happening is not happening so that it can proliferate and move forward in a detrimental way.
If that's the only thing that people got out of this entire show, that would be the message. So let's take this in a stepwise fashion, the way that Clint and I had evaluated it on many shows.
Right.
If you get measles, and I love the way this is all getting connected here, man. This is good back and forth. If you get natural measles and you get a reaction to it, meaning you get the bumps and you get the fever, you are more likely to be able to resist everything from osteoporosis to cancer for having the immune response go from beginning to end after being exposed to measles. Now, cancer elbows back and forth with heart disease in America as being the number one killer of Americans, cancer and heart disease. Well, what are they doing? They're getting upset whether a few kids in Disneyland came down with measles, and they're vaccinating kids for measles, and the kids don't get the fever, they don't get the rash, and cancer is like number one killer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what is fever? Like you said, it's the body's response. It's the natural progression of things to an invader. And so what happens during that invasion? Let's say that it's a virus. Your body actually makes prions, which are misfolded proteins that are there specifically to interfere with the process of infection. And this thing that I referred to earlier, the heat shock protein, is a refolding mechanism. So in the normal state, a prion will be made. In the normal state, a heat shock protein would then roll over it like you got to be old to remember rings that they would put around napkins in really, you know, fancy restaurants. Mm-hmm. It's the ring that goes around the napkin to refold it, and then everything's back to normal. But if you interfere with that process, if you interfere with the fever, then all of a sudden you've got rogue misfolded proteins that weren't set back to normal. You got heat shock proteins that weren't deactivated, because in the fever process, you have to deactivate the heat shock proteins. Otherwise, they will be putting the prions back to where they needed to be while the infection was raging. So you gotta send out the prions, you gotta knock down the infection, you gotta reduce the fever, you gotta let the heat shock proteins refold the prions, and then everybody's happy. But what they do is at every step of that process, they interfere with it. And they did it on purpose because they want that disease to remain in the human body unaffected. They want to embed it in people. And that is their agenda. They want us sick.
And spread it.
And
mostly spread it.
Yeah. Yep.
Because it's in there and it's not being handled the way that it should be because of the short-circuiting of the immune system. Not a short circuit. Maybe I call it an open.
Okay.
Not a short circuit, like a capacitor will like short together, and open. So what they do is they take the circuit and the changes that they make create an open. So, and I love Clint's breakdown of it, and it kind of goes towards the people that have sex with their cell phones these days. The immune system makes, I mean, and not like physically having sex with it, just never being able to put it down, loving it, caressing it, touching it.
Either way, it hurts.
Either way, right. And so the immune system in a normal functioning body will make the call. It'll say, hey, there's something in here.
Right.
Just want to let you know over there. And they're like, we're on it. And then boom, the natural process happens. The protein, the interferon, the natural, beautiful mechanism within us that goes out and says, okay, we see it, and now we see where it is, we see what it's doing, and here we are, and we're going to the site of this, and we're gonna kick some ass, basically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it kicks some ass. And when we're done, because we're so awesome, it's going to, whatever this is, it's not going to be able to take over. It's like an army trying to take over another army, and that's what. And you inside your body, you are, you know, you're not starting any trouble. You're not looking for trouble, right? The immune system's not looking for trouble, but if it sees it, it goes out there and it takes care of it, right? So, the open comes like in a circuit, and things just don't work right because the information's not flowing, and that's what Clint says. When they interfere with the natural thing of the body, that phone call does not make it to its destination.
And they did it all on purpose. And that's what people need to realize. This was malice aforethought. In legal parlance, they did this as a criminal act.
Hmm.
So let's talk about your word inflammation, because that's another darling that I expose in my books. And these were major revelations for me. I mean, you know, these were Judy Wood dustification moments.
Mm-hmm.
Within the concept of continuum, I had realized studying the work of Theron Randolph. They call him the father of environmental medicine.
Mm-hmm.
He likened addiction to allergy, whether it's allergy to food or the components in alcohol. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. Allergy, in his mind, was an equivalence with addiction. And that got this just the Germans call it a mind worm. This mind worm was like burrowing through my head, and I just couldn't get that correspondence out. And it's like, now wait a minute, allergy is equal to addiction, and immunity has four different hypersensitivity reactions to it. And I was starting early on to make correspondences to the four hypersensitivity reactions, which a lot of people will know. Like the IgE response is allergy and anaphylaxis. Oh, wait a minute. Allergy and addiction, allergy and type 1 hypersensitivity. Hypersensitivity is immunity. Wait a minute here. We got four, and this, you know, I'm talking about Babylonian name change. I'm talking about same pig, different lipstick. We had four what are taught as discrete concepts that all of a sudden had like this single golden thread running through it. And so I started studying the alternative medicine guru BS that absolutely floods the internet. And they're always talking about you need to dampen inflammation and boost your immunity. And see, when they do stuff like that, I'm really sensitive to BS.
Mm-hmm.
And in early days of like cough medication, they'd have a list of what cough medication could do. And they'd say, you know, it'll help you sleep. It's a cough suppressant and an expectorant. Now, wait a minute. To expectorize is to cough something up. So how can you suppress a cough while you're sleeping? Come up, man. It just doesn't freaking work. So, you know, from my indoctrination in the 1970s, it's like, no, homie ain't buying that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, segue to like the mid-2000s, and all these internet gurus are going, yeah, you need to decrease inflammation and you need to increase immunity. And I had just started to make these correspondences with allergy and addiction and immune response, and it's like, now wait a minute. If inflammation is part of the immune cascade, then how can you dampen inflammation while boosting an immunity? And that's when I realized, dude, all these alternative medicine people, they're either useful idiots or they're in on the game.
Or they're operatives.
Which then becomes fraud and criminal conspiracy.
Hmm. So, yeah, there are quite a few out there that that come to mind that, you know, you can say that might not have a complete understanding. Obviously, as you said so many times, that, you know, you and Clint are really the only ones talking about this prion, this prion situation. And then at some point, when you were over the last like 3 or 4 weeks, you were talking about the vitamins, and then I'm sitting there and I've always been a proponent of them, and I'm just wondering what would have to do. We can go over that at some point, but what would be good, what is beneficial to take in your findings, and that could just be another show or a conversation. But obviously, and this happened a number of years ago, how they said that this natural or this nutritional wave was going to there was actually books about it, that it was going to take root, and it was going to be a multi-million or billion-dollar market. And there is the key right there, because it's always about creating a market for everything. And a lot of people who don't know any better would say, hey, this is a good thing. But at the same time, it could be just, snake oil.
Dude, I'm so glad you're opening up these questions. So let's jump into the whole vitamin thing with both boots on. Everybody is magnesium deficient. Oh, my God, let's go out and get, like, the best magnesium and supplement it. And, of course, you know, to answer your question, what we are obligated to do, because we are so damaged by vaccines and environmental toxins, mm-hmm. we have to supplement because they damaged us. So it's basically, you know, not being a man and go, oh, you know, they blew my leg off, but, you know, I'll just walk it off, coach. You know, bandage the leg and keep limping in battle. But nobody is asking the question, well, how the hell did the magnesium go bad in the first place? And it isn't for lack of magnesium in the diet. My entire premise in these last two books is vaccines have so damaged the protein transport, the mineral transport proteins mm-hmm. on the cell surface and in the blood, that you can literally poison yourself taking any supplement. It just, you know, I brought up magnesium because that's the darling, you know, of this particular point in time. You could poison yourself with minerals and vitamins because they got no place to go. Because they're circulating in the blood, they remain unchanged because you're lacking the enzymes to convert them to a useful form, and you're unable to put them in the cell, and then that leads you to the next step of this shuck and jive fraud of, well, we need liposomal vitamin C. Really? Vitamin C from the beginning has always been and remains a water-soluble vitamin. Now, you're telling me that you're going to put it in fat.
Yeah, liposomal.
And trick it into the cell. Trick it. And nobody, Sholly, nobody is asking, why do I have to trick something that I should be able to get from a freaking lemon into my body at 10 grams a day when a lemon has 70 milligrams of vitamin C in it? Nobody's asking those questions.
Yeah.
And I'm looking up measles as, you know, as we're having this conversation. Clemens von Perkett, the guy that actually invented the term serum sickness, he used to scratch measles. He used cowpox on himself, but he was studying measles in 1903. So whereas the Japanese were actually doing what's called the molecular biology of interferon, I'm just, and, you know, throughout the conversation, I'll throw out dates and times of them studying the body's reaction to triggers and suppression. 1903 is our first mention of measles in the timeline book, you know, as it relates to what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So back to the vitamins. Yeah, we need something as a stopgap just to keep us limping alive, but we have to get to the root of, well, what went wrong? And what went wrong was that vaccines damaged our handling capacity, and our food has like 50% less nutrition because the agricultural practices are not agriculture.
Right.
What's the other big one that I wanted to get out there?
You spoke a lot about a number of times, which was really fascinating to me, was superoxide dismutase.
Oh my God!
And it was just like, as you were talking about it, it was just like, I heard of that. It's really important, you know. I've heard it was really important, and then you started talking about how that has been affected on a mass scale. That is, from what I remember you saying, it's like the most powerful antioxidant. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Well, I don't know if I could say the most powerful, but it's the most versatile mm-hmm. antioxidant that's native to the human body. And, you know, again, it's all about this deflection that you open the show talking about. It's like, okay, it's a fever pitch. It's and see, I'm sensitive to used car salesmen. I think they're all slime balls. And when you get this used car sales pitch for anything, including supplements and especially antioxidants, it's like everybody needs antioxidants. Well, let's back something up. Let's start at the rudiments. Within an infectious state, the body has really limited armament to fight whatever comes in it. And so it can only use things like enzymes and superoxides. So there is literally an oxygen radical that burns the holy hell out of the invader. It's like a lightning spark. Mm-hmm. And so everybody's go, oh, you need antioxidants. You know, oxygen radicals are bad. Really? They're not good or bad. They're there for a purpose. And what goes bad is that once that purpose is served, then just like, okay, this is showing my age. There were Saturday morning cartoons with like Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the entire series of cartoons, there'd be this little guy in a white cap and a white jacket and a big old brushy mustache, and he'd sweep up the elephant dung.
Yeah.
At the end of the circus. We have that in ourselves, man. We have everything to undo the processes that were initiated, except for one thing. The vaccines took them out on purpose.
So they knew exactly, they studied and knew the body and the process that meticulously, so that when they created a lot of these vaccines, that it would damage and take out these key elements.
And that's another concept that I came up with. I call it lot and serial number vaccine, because they are indeed made by lot, and they've got UPC codes on them with serial numbers. They know, you know, what batches had what in them. Here's a Jordan maxim. If you didn't make it, you don't know what's in it. So what's in the flu vaccine? Well, you didn't make it just because it says something on the label and there's a clear fluid in there. Are you really stupid enough to believe that? You have no idea what's inside of that. So they could, in a stepwise fashion, release lot and serial numbers of vaccines to Akron, Ohio, that took out the MTHFR gene, so that you got that particular presentation of autism. And then in Schenectady, New York, they could release another lot and serial number of vaccine that took out yet another gene that would then lead to another form of the quote-unquote, you got to love this, autism spectrum.
Autism spectrum disorder, right. It's just like everything else. I mean, you know, they have to give it multiple names, ISIS, ISIL, Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra.
Right.
So that everybody's like, oh, my God, there's just so many. Oh, my God, what's causing this? It's no wonder they can't figure out what it is. just unbelievable. I'm reading through one of Clint's, he's got a number of prion blog posts, and one of them just a list of at least 100 neurological wasting diseases, and there's just,
oh wow.
But yeah, I mean, unbelievable. That's what you do. You give, you know, you give this one, you make like 10 different, just like what they do with the, when they start handing out Prozac and all these other things like candy, they have to say, well, you've got, you know, speaking, you have podcast fright or something, some shit. Like, you don't like to do podcasts, but, you know, so take this while you're on a podcast and you'll be better, you know. Just all different kinds. I mean, they just labeled all of these diseases. They just make shit up. And so that people just have accepted that there's just a plethora of disease out there, and sooner or later it's going to get you. and thank God for the doctors and science. They're trying desperately to figure out what's going on.
That's the spin. You always have to have the "we come in peace" or "we're doing it for the children."
Yeah. And I mean, like, any number of times I've heard you say, they're not going to release something unless they've got a leash on it.
Mm-hmm.
So if, and this is kind of with regards, and I don't want to go too far off the track of what you were talking about, the lot and serial number, because I would definitely want to get back to that. Clint released the thing saying, basically kind of insinuating and speculating, and, you know, you and Clint's speculation is just top notch, knowing what you know and the research that you've done. The chemtrails, possible prion, infectious prion material in there, and how absolutely infectious it is with, results like the eye being transplanted into the woman. Mm. And then because the eye came from someone who had infectious prions, she didn't last 2 years and died of neurological wasting disease.
Mm-hmm.
So much, and it's hard to, really kind of, just so much, and you guys do your best to cover so many different angles, and you decide, you pick and choose, like, this makes sense that this is happening, so we discussed this, now we're going to move on to this next level and try to go as linearly as you can.
Hard to do in a continuum.
Continuum, exactly. So, I guess that my point there was, boom, so much, so many names for this, what seems to be the one culprit, one evil fucking plan. And so, binary. I guess basically what you were saying with the lot and serial number. Is that they can just pick and choose where everything goes. I guess that's where the microchips now, where they can track this shipment here, that. And it's, when you're doing this type of damage, it's always good to know where everything is.
Well, thank electronic records and Hillary Clinton for implementing HIPAA that, mandates that entire process.
And it's funny how they put that in there to make it look like it's helping and keeping people. And I think about this all the time. They put these things in place to make people think that their privacy is being protected when it's them that's being protected by it.
Yeah.
Ugh. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's beautiful because it's always opposite day. And you always have to define, this is for protection. Whose protection? They're protecting their secrets and their agenda. And all you have to do then, if you're issuing, and let's just call it what it is, if you're issuing biological weapons that were cataloged and you wanted to know how well you were doing, you only either had to read the newspapers or go to electronic records for hospital and clinic admissions, mm-hmm. and you could find, you remember that operation we were doing in Akron? Yeah, 100% success, man. It's that simple.
Yeah, and then they can go to the next step, go to...
And why? And, this is always my point. Why would they be doing it? Because they're working in an incremental fashion for something that Clint was hammering on concurrently with me, because we both saw at the same time this process. And the process within genetic research is this. Because we're working with evil, evil can't create, it can only destroy. So they do a process which is called knockout. So you've got a mouse, and we'll start with a mouse. You can put your granny's picture up on the wall for this. It doesn't matter. You start with a test subject, and you knock out a gene.
Mm-hmm.
If the test subject doesn't survive, then you go, oh, shit, I guess they needed that gene.
Yeah.
And it kind of messes up, the test. But if you knock out a gene and the test subject survives, but all of a sudden a protein isn't being made and it leads to a disease condition, then you go, oh, well, we can assume by working backwards that that gene made that protein and it leads to this disease. And, hey, Herbert, You're the one that was working on that gene, weren't you? Yeah, yeah, that's my gene. Okay, well, then we'll call this Herbertitis.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so in a stepwise fashion, supposedly, we've got like 30,000 native genes. That's 30,000 different permutations of creating disease that they have to play with. And they do it with abandon. I mean, these creatures are so evil, yeah. Nobody can really plumb the depths of how evil they are, that they enjoy what they're doing, man.
Yeah. Or, I mean, and this is these are things that just, you know, people can, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking about it, and I know it's happening. And in my mind, I'm like, I'm fighting myself, but I'm fighting myself a lot less than I used to. And I know, and I sensed it. I sensed it for years. I just sensed that there's something wrong. I mentioned this to Clint. I said, you know, I was, you know, I got like an upper respiratory thing when I was a kid, and then I started taking antibiotics, erythromycin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I feel worse now than I did before. You know, Margie, my friend Marge, she gets pneumonia one year. And, you know, it's like, and she never really got like sick before. I mean, she would be sick for like a day or two or something like that. Next thing you know, she's like, my back hurts, all this stuff. She's got to go to one of these things that are popping up like fast food restaurants now. The urgent cares, right?
Right.
Clint really kind of broke down what the meaning of that is. And so she goes in. And she gets an X-ray, which God only knows what that activates. And then she gets the one of these that are in the Cipro family. And you and Clint spoke about it. And I know Clint took Cipro for his parasitic infection. That I remember listening to the podcast, you guys talking about that. And so I'm always very, very leery of, you know, you're in a situation, something's got to be done. I don't know what to do. I'm like, yeah, drink some silver, do this, do that. And then next thing you know, she's, I'm at work and she's down there. She gets the, you know, I don't know if you remember what the name, it's in the Cipro family. It's this, what I remember Patrick calling specifically of last resort.
Right.
Antibiotic of last resort. And I'm like, they're handing this out like candy now. And so she, not only does she start exhibiting signs of some kind of antidepressant stuff, but at the same time, body aches. And you know that the classical cholesterol commercials. If you experience muscle pain or weakness, it's the sign. It could be the sign of a very, very serious, you know, muscle wasting.
Right.
And so I start getting scared. I start, you know, and then I didn't want to look at what it was that she was taking. All I knew is that whatever it was that she took by that evening, the back ache and the pain and everything kind of went away. So there's something in there that really attacked whatever that was, whatever was going on in the lungs to create the discomfort and to get her like really scared. Cause this was like Monday. She said, I had to leave work. I had to go home. And then by Friday, she was over at one of these urgent care places and she was just like, I'm having problems breathing. And she just was, you know, the worst that I had ever seen her with any kind of illness. So you know, in general, you get scared because when you know what we know, and I know like a third or less of what you know, and Clint knows, it's, you know, it's scary. And so you think like, what are they going to do? Is what they're going to give her worse than what she has? You know, and so I look up the name of it, and I can't think of it. It starts with an L. But it's in the Cipro family.
Lofoxin or something like that.
Yes, yeah. A floxin something, yeah. Levaquin.
Levaquin.
And I look it up, Patrick, and it goes right to a Forbes.com article, and basically, in a nutshell, you don't want to take this shit. Basically, in a Forbes.com article.
Forbes, yeah.
Harmed by Levaquin.com. People just absolutely wrecked, and she had to take like five of them. I think they probably, you know, maybe if she had taken two, she would have been okay, or just something to like, God only knows what the hell it does. But I mean, you saying it's the antibiotic of last resort.
Go to Foxy Hope.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's the name of the website. Like I said, I'm offline. If I'm on the phone, I can't be on the internet. Mm-hmm. Foxy Hope goes over a lot of like the cause and effect and sequela, meaning, you know, the after effects of this stuff, mm-hmm. with a lot of really intelligent message boards postings by the woman that heads it up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, get some background on that, because we only just broke into this floxicillin thing.
Yeah.
Fluoroquinolones.
Fluoroquinolones, that's correct, yes.
They started out as anti-malaria medication.
Anti-malaria.
And if you ever wonder why military men are coming back completely, shall we say, intercoursed in the head,
mm-hmm.
is because if they're in, quote-unquote, theaters that have even the hint of malaria, they're given this class of drugs, and it makes you completely crazy. So, you know, I'm not saying that has anything to do with Margie, but it is, like, such a dangerous chemical. And so I'm not up to speed on how to detoxify it yet, but I know a young man that is on my email list that was exposed to Cipro, mm-hmm. and they're not quite sure whether it was that or a vaccine that took out the MTHFR gene. It happens to do really well on supplemental methylfolate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just to keep all active, shall we? Adventis makes a smallpox vaccine that is known to take out the MTHFR gene. And then Merck makes the prescription, and they might have licensed the over-the-counter version of the 5-methylfolate replacement. So you can see, just by association, that they're in on what can only be characterized as a mafioso protection scheme. Hey, Guido, we took out your gene. Yeah, if you want to live, you got to buy our supplement.
Right.
And I'm just throwing stuff out there because I don't have answers for people that were damaged by fluoroquinolones yet.
Yeah.
We're always looking into it. I got an unpaid group of friends that are just the best researchers on the planet.
I've heard.
And we continually look into this stuff. But the assaults, Charlie, are so numerous and frequent. That's why I say we're only just dressing wounds until we can address the cause.
Right.
And you tell me how you want to structure the rest of the show, because I would like to talk about the causation.
Sure, absolutely. Sounds good.
Okay, so let's go back to SOD that you brought up, because I take notes and I like to, you know, stay on a theme.
Yep, yep.
I learned from Clint's work that superoxide dismutase at some point acquired damage to its structure so that it acted like a tag your it prion. Holy crap, man. It only takes little entrees like that to explain everything to a mind like mine. Now, people have to realize, I've been writing 5 books over the course of 3 years. This is all I've done all day, every day for 3 years, is live this material. So when I see every new bit of data, I'm doing like Tom Cruise on the Minority Report. I'm taking this data and I'm swiping it across the screen, and I'm, you know, putting this over there, and I'm enlarging this, and I'm, you know, trashing that. And I saw these patterns of, well, this is why these crazy mofos in the alternative medicine industry are screaming, you need antioxidants, you need antioxidants. because it's not a lie, but it's not the truth. We need antioxidants that are made naturally in the body. That's the little mustache guy sweeping up the elephant dung. Mm-hmm. We make superoxide dismutase. It should clean up all of the oxygen radicals that are created by prions, oxidative bursts from white blood cells, and whatever might come in from the environment. It should clean it up. And the question nobody ever asks is, well, why isn't it? They're just opening their mouths like little baby birds going, antioxidate me, antioxidate me.
Right.
Well, the SOD ain't there because it was prionized. It was made into a weapon. And so if you got like, and you know, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's the most powerful antioxidant, but it's the most versatile.
Right.
If that's gone, then we do need antioxidants. So they weren't completely lying,
mm-hmm.
but we don't need synthetics out of a bottle. We need to peel the layers back and say, these criminal SOBs destroyed our body's processes. And so we need antioxidants because, oh, well, we're being damaged. But put a semicolon there, and we're going to start a new sentence that's still created, I mean, still connected to the initial thought, is that things like prions, when they create the amyloid plaque that's left, you know, they cause cell death, and they deposit goo. One of the things that your body does to clean up the prions, whether it's successful or not, because sometimes it doesn't work, is the body will send out white blood cells, and they got small bit of weaponry, the oxidative burst.
Right.
Well, if you've got like a virus and you're fighting that, a bacteria and you're fighting that, you got a prion, you're fighting that, and the only trick your body has is the oxidative burst, then, well, yeah, you're going to be full of oxygen radicals. Yeah, you need antioxidants, but not out of a pill bottle. It's like, why the hell is the SOD AWOL, man?
Right.
And the reason is they destroyed it.
And it's not, and it just can't, I guess the switch, the genetic switch is turned on off to make it not effective, or is it something that can regenerate if given the right circumstances?
This is where I say multiple attacks simultaneously and relentlessly. All of the above, man. So like Clint's work clued me in that they could turn SOD into a prion forming or a misfolding agent. Okay, so
that would assist in the unfolding.
The SOD then bumps into other proteins, including SOD, and it makes them misfold. So it takes them out of action. Because size, shape, and charge is what determines chemical actions in the body. So if you have SOD, it can be present and work. If you have SOD and you crumple it up like a piece of paper, it's still present, but it can't work. And then the terrible part about it is that crumpled piece of paper, when it comes in contact with another SOD, can crumple that one. You know, it's a chain reaction.
Right.
And then, you know, it's like people get overwhelmed by me, and I don't blame them because I've lived with this crap since 2000. And then you got the lot and serial number variations that they can do. They could simply just go in there and either make a mutation in the SOD gene to make the SOD non-functional or shut it off. It's called gene silencing. And so when you would ask the question, well, what about the SOD? It could be all of the above. It could be either silenced or mutated or turned into, and the mutation could actually be the root cause of the reason why it's misfolded.
Right.
Thus, you know, becoming a misfolding agent. And so the question has to be asked, what's wrong and how do we correct that? Because I'm going to tell you something. I do take rare amounts of supplements just to keep me functional. but I do not want, and I refuse to take supplements the rest of my natural life because they are unnatural. They're synthetic. I am looking into repairing my chromosomes, the damage done by vaccines and environmental toxins and whatever else you want to throw in there, because until we do that, we will never be free of their tyranny, because it is the mafioso like deal of, hey, we broke your gene, now pay us for the supplement or you don't live. That's criminal.
That's one heck of a way to control population.
See, and you know, because, you know, I'm old. I remember Khrushchev and him banging his shoe at the UN meeting, and one of his quotes was, if you control the food, you control the people. And I found out that was actually attributed to the Romans. So they've been at this gig for a long time. But what came to me was controlling the food really does not need to be rationing it. If you control it at the genetic level, mm-hmm. look around, man. Go to a Walmart. There's people that weigh 400 pounds that can't keep their pants up beyond their butt crack.
Yeah.
These people, I'm not making fun of them. They're damaged. Damaged by, guess what does that? I just read this paper by MIT, and this is awesome. MIT and one of the collaborating departments was their artificial intelligence department on Roundup, the glyphosate herbicide. The obesity epidemic began in 1975 in America, 1 year after Roundup was licensed. So MIT is relating obesity to Roundup. And they got really good convincing science with mechanism of action. From my point of view, I never do, like, you know, very focused reductionist kind of stuff. It's all part of the continuum. And the vaccine disease. And so you look at a 400-pound person walking through Walmart, and you go, oh, you know, they're just a fat slob that doesn't have any control. No, that's a person that's starving to death. They're literally starving in a sea of what should be plenty. Because why? Everything that was in their food, their environment, and their vaccines damaged the body so much that it's in a survival storage mode. And no nutrition is getting anywhere in the cells.
Yeah, it's storing fat, storing of fat.
So if you control the food, you control the people. And you don't even need to ration it at that point. You know, rationing, that's for austerity. You know, give that to Greece, ration their food. You know, here in America, you got all the food you want.
You just need to create a weapon out of that and then give it to people in abundance.
right.
So no limitation of the food. Let's just destroy it, turn it into the doof food spelled backwards, which is one of your books as well, and then proliferate it in abundance in every way, shape, and form. I mean, look at how many fast food restaurants there. It's really is an amazing artificial creation that they've. I mean, just an absolute. Just bastardization of anything. A total bastardization.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was never, if things had gone the right way, and that's saying something, if things had gone the right way, this world, it would have been and could have been so different.
Well, I'll read you, I've got to pull it up. Let's see, it'll be here. Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars makes, like, the most cogent statement on that. I'll pull it up while we're speaking.
So this document was written in, now you can find it online, much like the report from, what is it, Iron Mountain, which mm-hmm. I know you guys have discussed a lot of these different things that have gone on in what Greg calls the conspindustry industry.
I love it.
And Clint has gone to great lengths to try to figure out, hey, are these things that were said, all these different things that people referred to in, you know, in the Alex Jones realm, did these things actually take place? And the Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars makes incredible sense because these weapons are silent, and there's wars going on that people don't even see. Thus, mm-hmm. the quiet aspect.
You can go to my website. I do have these as downloads. You know, if you just wanted to skip right to vaccinefraud.com, I've got a PDF page, and Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars should be there. Early in the document, it has the political introduction. In 1954, think about that, 1954, it was well recognized by those in positions of authority that it was only a matter of time, only a few decades, before the general public would be able to grasp and upset the cradle of power. Turning the tables, man, wow. 20 years. For the very elements of the new silent weapon technology were as accessible for a public utopia as they were for providing a private utopia. And so, you know, most of this document deals with mathematics and electronics, because they reduce everything to a question of energy, which I understand that from a concept point of view. I'm math illiterate, and I couldn't make a Tesla machine, even though I've got his books with diagrams.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have the capacity to take control and implement what they're talking about in Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, but it's clear that they're saying that we could do what I was saying earlier. I was in the garden under a blue sky, having fun, listening to the birds sing, smelling the tree blossoms, and then all of a sudden hell broke in because I could smell my neighbor spraying Roundup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could, the potential exists to take control. It's not something that, you're not going to petition like a third party alien or God or anything else, and Gaia as a planet isn't going to step in and shake off the fleas. We are nature. We are part of this integrated system. If change is going to happen, we are the hands and feet and eyes and ears and mouths that are going to do it, and nobody's doing it.
Yeah, it's a plan of, it's a weapon of mass distraction.
Ooh, I like it.
That leads to...
No, take a time.
So I've been speaking with Patrick Jordan from vaccinefraud.com. He has, he said, 15 books. You can find them over at lulu.com. That's L-U-L-U.com. And he's coming out with the Prion Agenda. You can find his in-depth discussions with Clint Richardson regarding prions and regarding vaccines, where they break it down. They got, what was it, like once a week for a couple hours for a couple years or more, talking about breaking things down. I'm sure I would love to have you back on with me again, as I'm sure that Clint's going to be sitting in for me as well, and you guys are going to be communicating continually. So that's very exciting. So is there anything that you want to say? If you guys want to email Patrick, you can go to vaccinefraud.com. You'll see his email address there. You can communicate with him directly, get on his mailing list, and then you can get some of his very, very entertaining emails. Absolutely just something else. He is an absolute, as I said before in one of my emails, Clint and Patrick, a couple of God's greatest creations, and we have them, and I'm lucky to be able to speak with you guys.
So thank you, and thanks for inviting me. I got to ask you, is this just an hour show, or are we going to go for a second hour?
Oh, this is this is ending in about a minute, but I'd like to stay on, stay in line with me once when we end the show.
Sure.
But, thanks for everybody in the chat room. Yeah.
try to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list. That's retarded babble. Protesters make the hit list soon as they start to rabble. Fear nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job come in.